sporting a pinstripe and wearing the regiment's tie. Blood in his eye, the world on his shoulders. Trims his mustache while he's dreaming of destiny's hour. Greedy for power, ready to save the nation and lead us in the fight. Never a doubt that everything he does is right. National hero, neat little man who's been chosen by fate to redeem the national dream, imperial greatness. St. George with a briefcase, he's looking for dragons to slay. Waits for the day we ask him to save the nation and lead us in the fight. Never a doubt that God is absolutely right. Classical hero, standing alone on the bridge, he's defending the race, setting his face against the invader. Knowing the worth of a man can be seen by his skin. The killing begins, determined to save the nation and lead us in the fight. Never a doubt that virtue is pure unblemished white. Yesterday's hero, trapped in a bunker and died like a rat in a hole. Ultimate goal of second-hand hero. Another one rises, demanding the right to be heard, and gets the bird. History shrugs its shoulders, gives a big horse laugh, and the cut price hero ends up with the rest of the trash.
And that was the new theme song, at least for tonight, for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. 2 hours of civil rights talk, interviews, babble, and general protests coming at you in the next 2 hours. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're going to be hopefully staying with us, maybe even calling in. I want to remind you our call-in number is 427-3772. We've got lots of stuff happening. Food Not Bombs being arrested almost nightly in San Francisco. We have an interview about, well, arrests from at least a couple of days ago. We'll be playing an update from the Coalition on Homelessness's Homeless People's Congress and what happened up there yesterday. I motored on up to San Francisco and stuck my nose into that and saw what was going on. We're going to also be updating Dennis Rehm, man who was in court endlessly on issues of camping and sleeping, and looks like it's still uncertain what the situation is, but we're going to be following that case. We've also got hopefully an incoming report on the city council's sellout of the Dolphin Lee people, the Hispanics living in the beach flats, who now apparently will have their house raised from under them if the weather signs continue to proceed as it looks like they're doing, thanks to, yes, our old friend Mayor Sleeping Band Byers, who zipped through the Dolphin Lee project as the highest priority at last Tuesday's city council meeting. Hope to have either Phil Bear, Jane Bear, or Scott Graham, Beach Flats activists, on the air later talking about that issue. So stay with us, and we'll stay with you.
Was a walking down by the Thames side, I spied a dead body washed away by the tide. Borne along on the river, it slowly drew near to the oily black water by Westminster Pier. Grey's doubled face with its halo of scum, I staring blindly at the high noonday sun. They took him to Southwark, to the mortuary there,
and hosed down his body and shaved off his hair. They noted his scars and distinguishing marks. They weighed him and measured him under mercury axe. They laid him to rest on a bed of white tiles. His life story entered in the mortuary files. They tagged his belongings, his clothes and a ring, a pipe, some tobacco, and a small piece of string, a pension book bearing the name Thomas Black, an old-fashioned timepiece inscribed on the back, for 50 years' service, devotion supreme. From grateful employers, this token of esteem. A good quiet worker, not given to strife, who never once questioned the boss in his life. They gave him a watch when they bade him goodbye, so that he could measure his life slipping by. It ticked through the empty days loud in his ears, a bright death watch beetle undermining the years. Then one act of protest, one moment of strife, they called it a crime when he took his own life. Now this lump of gray silence has finished with time. He demanded so little, and that was his crime.
And that's from the first album I ever heard that Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger sung. It's just kind of got some strange, ordinary name. It's Contemporary Songs is what it's called. And, of course, it was contemporary back in 1972 when it was published. It's still contemporary in 1999 because folks are doing the same sellout business, you and me and everybody else. It's real hard not to sell out given what's offered us and given the pressures we're under. So let's figure out how not to sell out. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobe's peer Robert Norris coming at you. And you want to call in, as one caller just did, and thank you, caller, for calling in. A tip of the hat to Craig out there. Give a call to 427-3772. That's FRSC, 427-FREE-RADIO-SANTA-CRUZ, 427-3772. And we can talk on air. What do we got here tonight? Well, as I said, I'm hoping to do some interviewing on the latest sellout by the city council around Dolphin Lee. We can always pick up on the silly box store stuff. And I have a very interesting plan for action to end homelessness in San Francisco, compiled by homeless and poor people of San Francisco at the Homeless People's Congress yesterday. I'll be reading you that platform at some point. Got lots of interesting ideas, and if you really want to work on them, you can perhaps get together with Huff in an active way. We're talking about ending the sleeping ban by a month, count them, 30 days of protest between Thanksgiving and Christmas in order to make the merchants sit up and take notice and the city council finally take action. But in order to do this, we need to see if people want to help organize it, participate in it, and stand by it. These are going to be, at least my idea, and of course I'm always open to suggestion and it'll be decided as we proceed, but my original idea was to have protests that were completely legal but highly annoying to downtown merchants and hopefully highly educational to the community of shoppers or potential shoppers that is going to be clustering in the downtown area Thanksgiving to Christmas. How would this happen? Well, it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz, and it's illegal to, after 11 o'clock at night. It's illegal to cover up with a blanket in Santa Cruz, $54 fine, 11 o'clock at night or after. And it's illegal to even lie down anywhere on Pacific Avenue any time of the day or night, thanks to the downtown ordinances passed by such leading lights of our community as Neil Coonerty and his pals on the city council, Mike Rotkin, and others of that ilk. And unfortunately held in place by people like Mayor Catherine Byers, who He's also, as I said before, behind the Dolphin Lee proposal to raise, evict, and throw out the Hispanic residents of the Dolphin Lee apartment complexes. These are the same people who got the current city council majority in office by trekking down to city council last fall, risking immigration harassment, risking harassment by people like Hernandez, Rotkin, and Kennedy, who are running around in the neighborhood doing their thing, risking harassment by the city for standing up and just saying no thanks to the beach area plan, the redevelopment, Third Street realignment, give it all to Charlie Canfield plan that was rejected by the voters. What is Byers doing? At a session of city council on Tuesday in the afternoon, without any announcement, without any debate publicly, without any real input from anyone, she led a motion to make the Dolphin Lee project and $4.5 or $7 million rolling into it the highest priority of the city council on its affordable housing issue. So all the liberals can feel warm and fuzzy by evicting a bunch of Hispanic people who will not be able to get into the new project. This one sucks big time, folks, and I'm hoping we can talk about this. And I'm inviting Jane and Phil Baer to call in if they can get to the phone. Perhaps they're near a radio. David Silva, by the way, has an upcoming debate tonight, for those of you who want to tune to our rival radio station, KUSP at 88.9 FM. He's debating Paul Sanford. You may remember Paul. He was a witness in the Steve Argue case. He was testifying for the prosecution, something to the effect about the protest. I actually wasn't in the court, and I don't think he had any really damaging testimony, but his general sense was, well, the protesters and the folks inside lifting the wine and eating the oysters and listening to the mariachi bands, we're all the same. We all think, there shouldn't be bombing. But in the meantime, let's raise more money for Representative Farr and the clowns inside the Democratic Party who are supporting more bombing of the Yugoslavian people. Anyway, Sanford was a testifying witness at that trial, and he's going to be debating David Silva tonight on the issue of Silva's hate-free initiative. The Hate Free Zone Initiative. I want to remind everyone listening, this is not the right not to hate. We all have the right to hate, and we should hate injustice, and we should hate whatever the hell we want to hate. This talks about specifically targeting groups with violent hate crimes, which I think is not something that we should have the right to do, and don't. So I think, and he's not prescribing penalties for even for saying the word nigger on the air or saying the word fucking landlord on the air. Or, I wish so-and-so was dead on the air. In terms of expressions of strong hostility, I'm not talking about urging people to go out and shoot people or kill people in that respect, not at all. That's counterproductive, in fact. We want to kill our bad ideas and ignorance. We're not interested in eliminating individuals. As Reverend Falwell has it, that famous monger of hate, we hate the sin, but not the sinner. In that respect, he has it right. Anyway, Silva has a debate tonight on KUSP. I'm on free radio. I'm debating with myself, of course, as usual. But Silva's radio debate happens 6:30 to 7:30. Call on in. I believe the number, if it's a call-in show, it may not be, but it's free radio that you get to call into endlessly, and I hope you start calling in endlessly because, hey, that's what makes the show go. But the number of KUSP is 476-2800, and I'm not sure if this is just a debate you get to listen to from a distance while all those brilliant vanilla types at KUSP give you a sanitized debate and exclude embarrassing questions, or whether you actually might have some real input into that. I'm not sure. And to find out, call 476-2800. You certainly will have input into this show, and our number, as I've said before, is 427-3772. Stay with us.
On Monday night he came to my door and he made such a din. Get up, you darling girl, and let your lover in. Well, I got up and I let him in, and on me he did fall. It was 5 o'clock in the morning before I got any sleep at all. On Tuesday night he came to my door, the joys of love to tend. Get up, you darling girl, before I go round the bend. Well, I got up and I let him in, and in my arms he lay. But he had to hear the stroke of four before he'd go away. On Wednesday night he came to my door a little bit late in time. I'd have been here sooner, you darling girl, but the hill was too hard to climb. He wasn't long all in my arms before he let me be. Then out of the house and down the road, but after the stroke of three. On Thursday night he came to my door so weary and so slow. Come give me a drink, you darling girl, and then to work we go. All night long he fought with it, and I had to help him through. And I heard him sigh as he rose to go, it's only after two. On Friday night he came to my door, a-shaking in every limb. Get up, you darling girl, and carry your lover in. Well, I got up and I carried him in, and I gently laid him down. But barely couldn't his spirit rise to reach the stroke of one. On Saturday night he came to my door, he came on his hands and knees. Oh, don't get up, you darling girl, stay in and let me be. When I got up for to let him in, he fell down in a swoon. And for all I tried to raise him up, he lay till Sunday noon.
And that may sound like dead air, but it's just pausing. And here you are, pausing yourselves as you wait for the next moment of excitement here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And that, I can tell you, is coming right at you, because in the studio with us we have roving reporter and writer, video journalist, and sometime Free Radio Santa Cruz producer Becky Johnson, or Beggar Backer Becky, as I call her. She's been hanging out with the beggars over at the Homeless Services Center, actually with the bureaucrats and the beggars at the Homeless Issues Task Force, or Task Farce, as I used to call it, and probably will call it again if it doesn't shape up soon. This was the shelter committee she went to. The Homeless Issues Task Force, which has been put together by the City Council, 13 people appointed to babble around while folks do nothing, is apparently not liking the idea of doing nothing and is starting to do something. And I guess at different committees, the shelter committee, the services committee, the legal committee, and the so-called process committee, different things are happening. I was at the legal committee last night. I came in late, and I guess, Becky, you were there too. But you also, you just came back from the shelter committee. You want to kind of tell us who was there and what was happening?
Sure. Ken Cole and Sherry Connable were there, as well as Don Lane, Mel Nunes, Marilyn Weaver, and Doug McGrath.
For those who don't know, Ken Cole heads the Homeless Services Center. That's the Karen Gillette's former position as sort of the capo de capos over the homeless, the right to make a phone call, the right to have a locker, all that kind of thing, and the right to have a shelter space on the floor, of which 30 people every night out of 500 to 1,500 get a space on the floor. It's also Cole and Cole's staff that we have to say was responsible for calling the cops on Robert Steffen, jailed for 90 days for trespassing, and also not allowing him in their program because he wouldn't do the required work. I thought I'd kind of update and bring you back for those who want flashbacks. However, Cole has also been pressing for a number of very important changes, and so he's not all bad. Certainly, I wouldn't say he's bad at all generally, but I think we got to keep the whole record in mind. Cole was there. Sherry Connable, of course, old-time activist, who I've often clashed with in the past, concerned with shelter issues. Then you had a number of other people who are on this issues task force. Marilyn Weaver, a strong advocate for homeless people, a woman who has been working for years at the Homeless Services Center, recently filed a complaint against Officer Seeley with a Citizens Police Review Board, which of course was rejected unanimously without a public hearing. And I don't think actually that Weaver asked for one, which she should have. Unfortunately, she didn't. That's another story. But what did all these people say about shelter?
Well, the early part of the meeting revolved around the issue that came up at the legal subcommittee last night about the closures on Elmar, or the Transportation Commission, which voted to limit parking on a section of Elmar Avenue from 10 p.m. at night till 6 a.m.
Now, you may remember, for those of you who've tried to sleep out along the North Coast, around Davenport, you suddenly see signs appearing Not it's illegal to sleep in your vehicle, but park here after 10 o'clock at night and you get your vehicle towed away or you get ticketed, in essence. This apparently is what is being tried in some parts of town to completely remove people in, not just their people, but their vans from various areas. And it's it drew some alarm a year ago when they were doing this, proposing to do this for the Mission Street Extension area at the same time as Mayor Sleeping Band Byers was coming forward with her hoax that she was actually going to consider changes in the sleeping ban over the winter so the homeless people would not have to freeze outside and would not have to face beatings and harassment in addition to exposure. And, of course, she did nothing of the kind, made no expansion of shelter. But what was stopped at that time was the posting of signs along the Mission Street extension, though I'm not sure it may have been done since. Now, apparently, Almer Street is the target?
It's Almar Avenue, and it's only a two-block section, two very short blocks. I drove by there earlier today, this morning, to see what the situation was, and I was really surprised to find that there was not a single residence on that section of Almar where they're proposing these parking restrictions. And I went by at 8:50 this morning, and there was not a single camper on there who I could identify as being, a homeless person sleeping in a camper. There was no vehicle that looked like it might contain a homeless person there.
Now, the background, of course, as some of listeners know, because I think we've talked about it a little bit before on the air, is that Officer Jim Howes, made notorious for such things as arresting homeless people in front of the full Civic Center Auditorium back in 1989, 4 days after the earthquake. I was present, I witnessed it, I was a journalist. He was unbelievable at that time. Recently earned some more notoriety by going after citizen petitioner Bob LaMonica, who is trying to pass a rent stabilization initiative and get it on the ballot. Howes came up to LaMonica about 2 months ago and told him at the farmer's market he could not petition there, he would be ticketed and, if necessary, arrested if he didn't leave. Now, this whole matter was ironed out when his boss sort of went to Howes and said, come now, you don't want federal lawsuits and lots of people showing up with tables in solidarity with Bob LaMonica. That wouldn't be good. I'm just fictionalizing what I imagine the conversation was between Chief Belcher and Howes. Now Howes apparently has been assisting and encouraging certain residents who apparently have decided NIMBY prejudices, that's not in my backyard, NIMBY prejudices, who want to remove homeless campers, homeless sleepers sleeping in their vehicle. It's not like they have a campfire on top of their van or they're depositing litter, shit, and debris on the street. No, none of these apparently are happening, according to an investigation by Laura Tucker of the Homeless Issues Task Force. No, rather, the residents are complaining, or were complaining what, Beck?
The only concern that was voiced by the man who circulated the petition was that some of the residents felt uncomfortable when they were walking at night and had to walk by vans that may contain people in them and dogs or something.
You know, just as I feel uncomfortable when I walk by large houses or vacant office buildings that should contain lots of people who need housing and in fact are, of course, profiteering instruments that simply fatten the purse and enlarge the waistline of some out-of-town clowns.
But even the Transportation Commission, when they took up this request for these parking restrictions from these neighborhood group, they cited that the reason that the parking restrictions should be enacted was because of camping violations. So there's no doubt that this neighborhood is trying to get rid of homeless people who are sleeping in their vehicles.
Now, let's clarify here, because we don't want to be guilty of what the Sentinel did and what Mike Rodkin used to do, and perhaps still does, not sure about that, which is to say the law currently punishes people for sleeping, and what the Sentinel and other politicians who favor this law say is, oh, that's the camping ban. They're just camping ban. No, we're talking about a sleeping ban that specifies sleeping in your vehicle after 11 o'clock at night makes you subject to a $54 fine anywhere in the city, regardless of the shelter situation, regardless of contingencies, regardless if you had to pull over and get some sleep because you were unable to drive any further because you were intoxicated and felt you were in danger. No, that's no justification, no excuse in the eyes of this dim-witted, prejudicial law. So we're talking about sleeping bans. We're talking about punishing homeless people for sleeping in vehicles where they have no other place to sleep. That's what we're talking about. And we're talking further about there is a law in place that makes it illegal to sleep in your vehicle. And so what Officer Howes apparently, what the neighbors are saying is they're being told, and this is now my understanding, I got part of this from David Silva, part of this from Laura Tucker, and I guess I picked up part of it, those are the two main sources I got it from, that Officer Howes, and correct me if I'm wrong, what has Officer Howes been telling residents concerned about people in these vehicles?
Well, there's a little dispute about it. One version A says that Officer Howes told them that there's absolutely nothing he can do when people are in their vehicles. Version B is that Officer Howes told them that even with the camping ban, if he comes up and knocks on someone's camper or their truck or van at night and no one answers, there's
a sleeping ban, right?
What did I say?
Camping ban.
The sleeping ban is a portion of the camping ban. And so when a person violates the sleeping ban, that is illegal sleeping out of doors at night,
or in a vehicle,
then they get a ticket that is under the umbrella of the camping ban. So as far as the city and the police are concerned, sleeping and camping are the same thing. Of course, sleeping is falling asleep, and camping is, I don't know, setting up a tent, a picnic, a barbecue, a weenie roast.
Right. So there are these different, some people say Howes does one thing, some say he's doing another, but the question is, what kind of information or misinformation is really being conveyed? And what I'm hearing here is, as far as I know, when an individual in a vehicle is contacted by a police officer after 11 o'clock for sleeping in his or her vehicle, he or she usually gets a warning to get the fuck out of there, or a ticket, which is a $54 crime. Now, in theory, an individual can hide in the van and ignore an officer's pounding on the door. In practice, what has happened in the past when this is done is, and I've heard this repeatedly, though I haven't heard it recently, so I've got to be honest about that, officers or whoever is saying, police, open up, begin to shake the van and bang on the van and start threatening people inside. Now, there's some people who have the stomach to pretend that they don't hear this, but there are others who are afraid their windows will be broken, that their van will be invaded by the police officer in search of so-called criminal behavior, to wit, sleeping in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, and I have some videotape showing the dents in the back of a camper for a man named Lloyd, who was approached by police at about 8 in the morning. And they banged so hard with the flashlight that there were visible dents in the back of his van. So the police can be pretty nasty when they're trying to flush out someone who may be criminally sleeping in their vehicle.
This, of course, was a year ago, and it concerned a disabled man who actually was catheterizing himself when this all this banging happened. It was quite a case. We actually interviewed the man on the air. I believe his story. I don't recall the disposition of that ticket. I don't remember if he was dismissed or not. But the point being, when police come to a van at night and begin pounding on it, it takes a pretty bold person not to come and respond to that. So the claim that Howes can do nothing sounds to me like pretty much unmitigated horse poo-poo, particularly since Howes has been around here for a decade and knows how things work. I no doubt has given out his share of sleeping ban tickets. Furthermore, if an individual fails to respond to a police officer's knocking on the window, and if the police officer claims he has probable cause to believe that an individual is inside that van, let's say he hears snoring or saw a light or heard a noise or a furtive motion, he has the right to break into that vehicle. And he will probably say so. This is not likely to let the person inside remain quiet in any peaceful way. And I have, again, received reports in the past of these kinds of threats made, and it's happened at least in one or two instances, though it is not a frequent practice by the Santa Cruz police.
And another problem is that they can come and tow the vehicle, too.
And that has happened more recently. The vehicle of activist Chris Brozda was towed away, I believe, a year ago after his second sleeping ticket, though it must be said that there have been changes in the sleeping ban sections, actually in the entire camping ban ordinance, which makes sleeping ban crimes, of which this is one, as distinguished from a camping ban crime, which would be setting up an encampment, both of them, though, both in the same camping ban ordinance, make it an infraction rather than a misdemeanor, so that
theoretically, you can't be arrested immediately, no matter how many infraction tickets you get. Though, in fact, this is not necessarily true, because if an officer believes you're going to continue to repeat the same offense, he can... Now, this is an interesting question. I'm not entirely sure of this, so I want to be careful of the ground I'm walking on, but I believe it has been said to me by officers that they can arrest someone if an infraction is likely to continue. Now, it is also true that those times when officers have made that statement, there was a provision in the law that made a second infraction within 24 hours or 48 hours or a month a misdemeanor. So it's not clear. We're getting kind of legalistic here. Anyway, this whole issue apparently of how's giving misinformation about the camping ordinance, and do you have any indication he was encouraging residents? And I guess are you talking about hundreds of residents here?
Well, he took the petition from this Richard Bozer and delivered it by hand to Mayor Byers, was the report that we got. So
report from who?
That was from Laura Tucker.
One of the staff people for the Homeless Issues Task Force. So Howes apparently is playing a leading role in at least facilitating increased restrictions on homeless people and their right to park a vehicle and sleep at night.
Well, let's not forget the Transportation Commission, which voted unanimously to approve this parking restriction, even though they were fully aware that it was being leveled at homeless people.
Well, wait a minute. Doesn't the Transportation Commission include that fine liberal Fred Geiger, a well-known supporter of the rights of homeless people? Surely he wouldn't vote for such a thing.
He voted for it, and several people have contacted him, and he has indicated that he might have voted differently if he knew the full details of the case.
Well, so that was part of the saga, and I guess the most recent thing was that and I guess other concerns of those who heard about this, including Laura Tucker and including me and you, was that Howes and Mayor Byers didn't go to the Homeless Issues Task Force and say, wait a minute, look what's happening here. You better step in and you know, talk to the residents, talk to the police, investigate what's happening, look for some mediation. I mean, this is an increased restriction, or at least know that there's a hearing coming up of the Transportation Commission on October 13th, and you might want to appear there and talk about the issue to the transportation commissioners. No, our fine mayor did none of these things, nor did the police department, nor did any of the commissioners. In fact, it was simply a done deal. It went right on through, and we learned about it, I guess, just barely in time for poor Laura Tucker to run around spare changing and panhandling $50 to appeal this decision, right?
That's how it happened. The way we learned about it is that Councilmember Christopher Crone had gotten the letter from the residents, and he passed it on to local activist David Silva. Now, David is not a member of the Homeless Issues Task Force, but he is sort of a high-profile person in the community for protecting the rights of homeless people. And David's had a number of personal problems, including a recent death in his family. And so he maybe didn't pass it on to others in a very timely fashion, although he did, as you put it, kind of in the nick of time. Laura Tucker was able to file the appeal.
Reminder again that David Silva is currently in debate on radio station KUSP with Paul Sanford on the issue of the Hate Free Zone Initiative. You can tune in to that at 88 point something or other. 88.1? Fair enough. 88.9, it says here. One of the two. One or nine. Keep tuning until you find that if you get bored with this show, or if you have a second radio, put that up to your other ear, and then you can call in and talk to both shows. Continuing. So here we have, I guess, Laura Tucker is appealing this. And I know last night at the legal committee of the Homeless Issues Task Force, where I kind of came in late, there was a considerable brouhaha. Sherry Connable was up in arms. Lucy Kinmitzer, another activist and writer whose son was beaten by trollbusters and has still gotten no satisfaction from the police department in terms of any meaningful information about that investigation, were all concerned about this appeal.
Yeah, and Lucy's been waiting for 2 weeks for Officer Howes to call her back.
Officer Howes is not only distinguished for harassing and arresting homeless people in the middle of earthquake weather when the shelter is full, and indeed the very head of the shelter came out and said, Officer Howes, back off. These people need a place to sleep. Howes, in riot gear, essentially threatened the head of the shelter away from that kind of behavior. He is got his fingers in the pie in the middle of this so-called investigation of Trollbusters, where, again, we find people are getting beaten up. I mean, I heard another report last night. Again, it was second or third hand, and maybe you can tell us more about that if you have more information on this report of a beating, Becky. Not sure if you know anything more about that.
The only information I have is that a few days ago, a woman was beaten up and sexually assaulted. I think it was near the corner of River Street and Highway 1.
But do we know if this was homeless on homeless crime, or white boys out having fun, or I don't know, you know, or young skinhead thugs, or just some incidental domestic violence case involving people?
I don't really have any more information about it.
Right. I mean, that's important to know, but I do know that I can tell you this from investigating myself, at least in terms of talking to people extensively at the Homeless Services Center downtown and elsewhere, that there have been 25 to 35 assaults on homeless people, which I put into the classification of troll busting, going after homeless people for sport, going after homeless people out of prejudice and hatred and desire to drive them out of town, going after homeless people as an identifiable group, a practice which Chief of Police Steve Belcher assures us is not happening. There ain't no such hate crimes going on in Santa Cruz. Isn't that what the police chief tells us?
Yeah, well, at least that's what I read in the Sentinel, was that they didn't think that the attacks on homeless people were hate crimes, and we've been very disappointed at that pronouncement. It seems to counter what we've heard, that homeless people are being assaulted by total strangers who are, you know, going through the woods with baseball bats and hitting people in sleeping bags. That sounds like a hate crime against homeless people to me.
Or were in the spring and summer. I haven't heard of any recent instances of that happening. Let's be candid, let's not exaggerate, and let's be accurate, at least in terms of information reaching me. So you, at this shelter subcommittee that you just came from, again, of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which is now attempting to turn itself into a Homeless Issues Task Force, believe it or not, I guess there was concern about this appeal. And I know last night at the legal committee, Sherry Connable and the legal committee all voted, let's take this back to the big meeting of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which is on Monday, and say, we're taking up this appeal. We're going to pay the $50. We want this thing dealt with. We don't want the police department running interference and politicizing things by advocating that more spaces be cut off from homeless people, and in doing so misrepresent what the camping ordinance does and what the powers of the police department are to deal with real, quote, crimes, that is to say, the fears and prejudices of local, it's hard to call them residents, because you were telling me that you were out there this morning and you didn't see any residential housing?
In that two-block section that would be affected on Elmar Avenue, I didn't see a single suspect vehicle at 8:50 this morning.
Well, like Jews, Gypsies, and Mexicans, these people can clutter up a neighborhood. Homeless people can clutter up a neighborhood. And I think possibly, even though they might not have been exactly nearby, you know, one block, two blocks, three blocks away, contagion can spread. Was that the idea?
It just... Well, let's see. Sherry Connable said something at the meeting. She said that it's like, she says, it seems to take only one or two well-dressed people to stand up and get upset. She called it tantrum politics. And that's what happens, that if the people of a certain class or caliber seem to have much more weight in what they say, even if there's really no substance to their arguments, if it's just an irrational fear. Somehow the city council seemed to cater to those sorts of people, and the homeless people get the dirty end of the stick each time.
Of course, the whole point of the season of protests that we've been talking about, and I guess that will be the subject of discussion for all you potential protesters out there at the Rise Zone next Tuesday at 1 o'clock at 224 Walnut, when HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, will be having its next meeting, is to indeed stand up against this kind of prejudice and not wait for the city council or the city manager or the police department to suddenly get enlightenment and start treating homeless people in a fair and dignified fashion.
Well, I am happy to report that the shelter subcommittee, along with the legal subcommittee, were unanimous in their opposition to these parking restrictions, and will likely at the large meeting on Monday support Laura Tucker's appeal.
Right, and of course this appeal will come up at sometime in the next 45 days at the regular city council meeting, depending on the preferences of Mayor Birdshot, Birdseed, Bullshit, excuse me, Sleeping Band Byers. I become just foul-mouthed when I think about our current political leadership.
Task Force member Mel Nunes said that, he said, well, maybe this is an opportunity to get on the agenda for people who have been denied getting on Mayor Byers' agenda.
And that should be pointed out for those of you who aren't following the arcane political gyrations of this particular task force struggling to become a task force, is that they have, over a month ago, they passed a resolution that said the whole camping ordinance, not just the sleeping ban, but every part of it, is nonsense. It is abusive. It's got to go. And they've been trying to get on the agenda simply to make their little report to the city council ever since. And for some reason, whether it's because staff member Don Lane is taking his marching orders from Catherine Byers or Dick Wilson, the city manager, or because he's hard of hearing and doesn't understand that that's what the Homeless Issues Task Force wants to do, they have not been allowed a place on one agenda after another. And we're not talking about a full-scale debate of the camping ordinance. All they want to do is go before the city council and say, you got all of us together to investigate this. This is what we found. Do something about it. That's all they want to say. And the city council can just sort of ignore them or whistle and walk the other way, as they usually do. But they haven't even been allowed an opportunity to be on the agenda. And what I heard from Christopher Crone on Monday at his little meeting at the Cafe Pergolesi that he has every Monday before the Tuesday City Council meetings is that Byers plans to tell the Homeless Issues Task Force to just throw everything into an interim report and she'll look at it in January, which of course would make a farce of the task force. But since it doesn't want to be a task farce and wants to be a task force, and we all want it to be a task force, not a task farce, who wants to be a farce? Better to be a force. They are going to start, hopefully, turning out one thing after another, even though Catherine Byers doesn't like it. And, of course, that means they may all be kicked out of off their commission seats. What's going to happen then?
Well, that'd be great. I'd really love to see a runaway task force.
Right. Well, of course, so for all of you who are interested in following this more directly, you can always come down on Monday. That's Monday the 1st, I believe.
November 1st.
Looks like it. The day after Halloween. Bring your trick-or-treats with you and see what the task force does and support them in what they do if they stand up for the rights of homeless people. In fact, there are a lot of good activists there who'd like to stand up for the rights of homeless people, but forgotten how to raise a picket sign, don't want to do any protesting, and, you know, they're just much too busy.
Here's one thing I learned at the meeting. Sherry Connable, with one of her many conversations with Catherine Byers, had talked about the 3-day limit in the driveways that was passed when they modified the camping ordinance last March.
Let me, again, specify what this is. This is a teeny tiny Fitzmaurice. It's hard to call it a scrap. It's a scrap of a scrap thrown to homeless people that says, if you get the permission of somebody who lives in the neighborhood and who has a driveway and the owner's permission, I think you need both.
If the person's a renter, you have to get the renter's permission and the owner of the property's permission.
That's written permission. Then for 3 days, count them, three out of every month, you can park your vehicle in that sacred driveway and sleep there, but only for 3 days.
And only if you have a valid license and insurance on that vehicle.
You know, sleeping does require insurance. You never can tell. I mean, you know, you might get hit by a roaming night spirit, succubuses and incubi. They're all over the place.
So Sherry was confronting Catherine, according to her version, and saying, well, what is this, 3 days in a driveway? That's ridiculous. It's an insult to homeless people. And Catherine admitted that, well, that's really for people like when their family members come to town for a visit, that they can sleep in the driveway. And so it turns out that that's not for homeless people at all in Catherine Byers' mind. It's only for middle-class people when they're having company from out of town, and they find the camping ordinance to be inconvenient.
Right. So, again, I think I want to remind our broader audience out here, though it's kind of fun to follow these little peregrinations and little back-and-forth details of this, and I think it's important in a way if you're kind of, it's kind of like, you know, if you're a baseball fan, you follow all the intricacies of the game. That's nice. But the reality is, as it gets wet and cold, there is no change, no increase in shelter, no let-up, in the pressure on homeless people. As you can see, Officer Howes is providing misleading information to campers, is actually funneling further restrictions to compliant boards like the City Transportation Commission through a mayor who has apparently knows about it but doesn't give a damn and is allowing this to happen. And what we need to do is show up in force in a fashion that persuades the city mothers, fathers, and buck getters at the downtown association that doing this is that's allowing a law to stay in place that makes it criminal for people to sleep at night is an obscenity that will affect their cash registers. It will influence their pocketbooks. And if you're interested in that, I would put out an appeal to you to either show up at 1 o'clock at the Rise Zone on Tuesday to give your thoughts and support and feelings on the issue. That's at 224 Walnut at the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or call 423-HUFF now, right now. Go to the phone and say, yeah, I want to be a part of this movement. I want to find some way to support demonstrations between Thanksgiving and Christmas. I may not want to be arrested. I may not have a lot of time, but I want to do something. Because we need to know if people out there want to do this. 423-HUFF or Rhizone, 1 o'clock on Tuesday. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Stay with us. Let's get musical.
In the month of sweet July and a courtship just begun, they was both 18 years old, but he was a little too young. For whenever she'd ask him to do a little job, he was always heard to say, well, I wouldn't know anything about that, better go and ask Jimmy Gray. I have a field of early corn, it's waiting to be mown. Love, would you come around?